morning, everyone. Welcome to the
Fairbanks City Council work session. This is January 21st, 2025. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringston.
Here.
First up is Resolution 5157, a resolution awarding the NC Machinery Company to provide a motor grader in the amount of $432,119. I would note on page 192 of our budget, our original budget amount was $490,000, so we came in a little bit less. Good job, Jeremiah. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll go to resolution number 5158, a resolution awarding a contract to RWC International Limited to provide an asphalt truck in the amount of $411,811. On page 192 of your budget, you'll see that we budgeted $475,000 for that. So he's a two-time winner here with our budget. Any questions on that? Mr. Ringstead. Speak into the mic, sir.
Wow.
In time for next winter?
Yeah, we're hoping that it'll be in here by fall, but if it follows track with the last ones, it's going to be later into the winter to springtime before we receive it.
So it should happen for the summer of 26.
Yeah, 10-4 this, and we don't foresee seeing that asphalt truck this summer, so that'll be
a year out.
Yeah, be 2026 is when we'll actually be utilizing it.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I'm glad NC's local. Is this RWC? Is that a local firm? Okay, good.
Yeah, 10-4.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jeremiah. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Item number 4, Resolution 5159, a resolution authorizing the City of Fairbanks to apply for funds from the United States Department of Transportation for the fiscal year 2025, Rebuilding American Infrastructure and Sustainability and Equity Raise Discretionary Grant Program for Island Home Subdivision Reconstruction. Amount of $18,950,000. With different portions thereof. Ms. Sprinkle.
Is this the third time we're trying for this?
If not the fourth.
Okay, just trying to keep track. All right, thank you.
Okay.
It was at 30 grand at one point. Wasn't it for the Island Home Complete Pot project? 30 million, excuse me.
It's about a $22 million project with everything.
Okay.
And so we've portioned it out, and it's that includes also the laterals from every house, water and sewer to the mains, because my thought is they need to be changed out. If we go in there and redo the roads, water, sewer, and lines and system, we don't want homeowners and coming back in and ripping it out and tearing it up. So, Mr. Ringstead.
Including gas.
Gas was installed already, but
it's already through there.
Yeah. Ms. Sprinkle.
Does that add cost to, or does that raise property taxes in the area?
No.
Okay, just checking.
What it might do, depending on Golden Heart Utilities involvement, it might raise water sewer costs. But those laterals and lines have not been probably replaced since original construction in 1953 by Heaven Neredic subdivision. What it is, it's a subdivision with the highest density housing what is now in the city of Fairbanks on 400 people, 400 homes, and your lot sizes are 50 by 100. And again, this was developed before it was in the city limits. There we go. Item number 5 is resolution 5160, resolution authorizing the City of Fairbanks to apply for funds for fiscal year 2026 to congressionally directed spending. CDS appropriation for Island Home Subdivision. It's not been introduced yet. But what we're doing is we're taking every bite at this apple as we can. This is a different, separate program. And we'll be applying for this by February 15th. And hopefully the Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan's office can bring us through this with a positive conclusion.
Are these two different funding sources for the same thing, or?
Yes.
Cumulative?
Yes.
Right.
Wait, so let me confirm what I'm hearing. If one doesn't work, the other will, or we're combining them.
The other might.
If one doesn't work, hopefully the other one will.
Hopefully.
Thank you. And if we get both, then what?
We're partying, man.
Okay. Just checking. Thanks.
Okay. Item number six, ordinance 6303, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 26, Article 3, Sections 26 through 94 and 26 through 95, amending the term of a private ambulance service license and renewal procedures. Advance at January 27th. Any discussion on that? Yes, we have. Okay. Item number seven, ordinance number 6304, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 54, Procurement, Sections 54-39 and Section 54-241, to clarify the council notification requirement for sole source purchasing. This is not introduced. And we're tightening up our sole sourcing purchasing a little bit. You notice there under Section 54-39, we deleted a little bit. And then under the second page, Section 2, we put in a Item D. The purchasing agent must provide a quarterly report to the City Council for all sole source purchases made in the amount of $250,000 or less when competitive bidding is not deemed possible, and recite reasons for and findings. So what we're doing is tightening it up and reporting it back to you a little bit better. Discussion? Mr. Marnie.
So was this through the Finance Committee?
This was not through the Finance Committee. It was a clarification. It was a conversation, really, that started between the city clerk and the purchasing agent.
Mr. Engstead.
So we're... The current one says the amounts of $50,000 or less. So we're requiring anything up to $250,000, so more of it has to come to the council.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm not awake yet, but are we changing the lettering on these paragraphs in the section one? They're what? Put in bold, and I'm wondering if
Madam Clerk will answer that question, sir.
So that the purchasing agent recommended that last sentence of the existing A just be moved down to B, so that B is now part of A. We're just moving that sentence down to create a new B. That's not new language. She thought it made more sense to add its own section. We're striking the language in A only because we're adding the language on the next page in 241D to cover all of it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We will go to item eight, ordinance 6305. An ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Section 70-162, to ensure viable and safe traffic intersections, and amending the City of Fairbanks' schedule of fees and charges for services. This has not been introduced. Discussion. Bob, you want to come up and bring us through this?
Yeah, what the hell to do?
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Morning. This really addresses a deficiency in the code, the existing code. The existing code has a provision for the clearing of sight triangles at intersections. Trees, really. That's what it says. It says specifically brush and trees can be removed. You know, if the city engineer determines that these brush and trees are blocking the sight triangle for an intersection. just briefly what that really is. If you're going, let's say, on 8th Avenue heading west and you come to Cowles, right? You're on 8th Avenue heading west, you come to Cowles. Sometimes, well, 8th is maybe a good example, or maybe not, but sometimes there's fences in the way, so you have to creep out into the travel way before you can actually see the cars coming on Cowles. So what this what this does is it corrects that part of the code where it says the city engineer can only deal with trees and brush. It's really any obstruction that blocks sight, right? It's not just trees. It can be a fence, like a lot of times.
It can be a snow pile.
It can be a pile of snow in the wintertime. It can be a sign. It can be anything. So that's what this really does. It corrects that deficiency, and it also, instead of a $200 limit, it actually charges the owner who refuses to correct the deficiency the actual cost of removing the obstructions.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So, Bob, you mentioned 8th and Cowles. Is that the big, ugly black fence that I see in a big yard right in the corner that you can't? It's just enormous.
Ugly would be subjective, I guess, but I think I know what you're talking about. I think that one was installed correctly.
That surely has to be a problem for looking to the right before you get on the road, no?
I'd have to really check which one, but one of them was installed correctly, and one on one side of the street, it hasn't been adjusted yet. Cowles is a tough one because it's a narrow street. Cowles, the actual speed is not really obeyed by the signage. It's a pretty high volume road, so and there's a lot of obstructions in there. You know, we don't want to cut down all the birch trees that President Harding planted or whatever, but we still want to adjust things.
Mr. Marty.
So in the past, Public Works has always done a great job. They kind of police this. Is that no longer the case?
Well, not really. You know, the most recent one I did, well, not most recent, well, 10th Avenue, there was a clearing we did there, you know, at 10th and Barnett. And then down at the dog park on 1st Avenue, there was a bad sight problem down there. See, this is on private property. And when the sight distance are determined, Public Works can clear them. Now, Public Works can go into the right-of-way and clear things in the right-of-way. We're not talking about necessarily the right-of-way. We're talking about on private property with this. The sight triangle moves into private property beyond the right-of-way. So to get onto private property, you know, we want to give the owners a chance to clear it, right? We don't want to just start cutting trees down because we know what happens when we do that.
Mr. Clayworth.
Bob, I'm looking at page 2 of 3 on setback. Item D, it says any obstruction blocking sight. And further down, it says items including but not limited to trees, plants, snow, large vehicles. And what about fences that are grandfathered, essentially have been there for 30 years, that are blocking a site? Are you planning on going after those too?
It depends. It depends on how bad it is.
I don't want to be on council when you do this.
Well, 30 years ago when the fence was put up, the traffic may have been different. And now if the traffic, you know, it really depends, you know. That's what I would say. Like I said, we don't want to cut down ancient trees, you know, that maybe we can limb them, or maybe we can adjust the fence so it can meet the spirit of this thing. So we don't want to leave anything that's really going to cause an accident, right?
And they can appeal it to the mayor's office, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, I'm thinking over here on going on to Noble Street on 8th Avenue. There's a building there that you have a hard time seeing around.
Yeah, we're not going to remove the building, right?
Yeah, you're going to move the building?
No. Well, it's a blighted structure.
I mean, the biggest problem is brush. I know hedges and things like that, which you can do something with, but I don't know. The fences, to me, that's somewhat of a grandfathered issue, and I would start to balk at something like that.
Except that would help future people who put fences in to think about it.
For the future, yeah. I mean, the building.
I mean, you have to be sensible,
I think the building
right?
department should be involved in that. And when you're designing a lot, to say, here's the rules with fences, especially when you're on an arterial.
Well, I wish you would go down Cowles and look at that black fence I was seeing the other day. I just thought, oh, my gosh.
Mr. Ringstead.
I've seen this as a growing problem, too, that it seems like as time goes on, the brush is growing up, getting more and more, and the trees are getting bigger. And so I appreciate, you know, taking the positive step to address it. I think with the fences, I'd have the same concern, but I think there's a difference in a solid wall fence versus a chain fence. I mean, the whole assumption here is visibility, right?
Yes. My experience is when people realize what they're doing and I show them, they fix it. Yeah. They realized they just had no idea what they were doing.
Haven't looked at it in 30 years.
Yeah, and I say, hey, look, you know, we got to remember, it's not just for cars. If there are people who are using the sidewalk, the pedestrian side distance is blocked too. So, and like I said, it depends.
Just in terms of wording, it says that city engineer is authorized to direct people to do that. I would hope that in the process, it's more like we're asking them to do that, as opposed to coming in and saying, you shall. You know, I mean, that's what's going to make people real irritable, I think. So it's a matter of the approach. And I hope this will be a lighter approach, and 90% of the people are going to take care of it.
And that's really the existing way we conduct business now. You know, you're exactly right. It's how you approach people.
It's how you approach people.
Mr. Marnie.
So what generated this? I mean, did you get complaints or?
Well, the most recent one was on Minnie Street at Clara. You know, Clara is a road to the north at Minnie. And the owner was piling snow up. So we got complaints from residents when they're coming out to Clara. They really can't see down Minnie. You know, Minnie's a bad road anyway, right? It's narrow. There's a bridge right there. There's a curve. And so I looked at it, and it was a hazard. So, you know, I'm not going to say exactly what they said here initially, but after we sent them the letter, you know, saying, hey, look, would you remove it? Then their response was, and then we sent them the letter, said, well, we're going to remove it and charge you. Then they removed it. So that was just mere a couple weeks ago.
Ms. Thurin, do you have any questions?
I just wanted to agree with Cowles because when you go down 3rd and 5th, it's hard to see going around the corners there. So I agree.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to item 9 on our agenda, ordinance 6306. An ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 70-161 and the local amendments to the 2018 International Fire Code adopted by reference at the Fairbanks General Code Section 30-32 and enacting Fairbanks General Code Section 30-33 to ensure access to fire hydrants, amending the city's schedule fees and charges for services. It's not been introduced yet. Any discussions or questions on this?
Is this the fire department or the public works, or who? What was this an issue from?
Jared, would you come up and give us a briefing on this?
This kind of came about as looking into the code for what, you know, code compliance and all those factors as things developed. And this was prompted by a specific incident over on Chief Alexander in that newer subdivision off of Phillips Field Road, where it's on a curve of the street at the edge of the subdivision, and one homeowner had pushed the snow from the driveway over. Other homeowners had pushed the snow across the road, right, as they go around that curve. And then resulting from that, Public Works came behind and said, well, this is bladed their sections, right? So that's created, this was noted in late October by Public Works, that, hey, this homeowner is looking like they're starting to bury the fire hydrant. Okay, so when this got routed to me about a month later, I get over there, and now the snow pile is at least 5 feet high. Mm. So this particular hydrant didn't have its flag anymore, right? You know, its little pop-up reflector. So now the fire hydrant is completely buried 5 feet deep, and about 15 feet in front of it is snow berms 5 to 6 feet high. Mm. So the only reason that I knew there was a fire hydrant there was because I had a picture from, you know, the lady driving her grader, you know, from a month prior. And the only way anyone else would know it is, you know, fire department has an overhead satellite map showing here's all the fire hydrants, right? So if that person's house caught on fire, engines get over there, you know, major fire, they're going to run out of water pretty quick. Or, you know, the neighbors around the street, you know, anything like that, that fire hydrant's pretty important for that little chunk of neighborhood. So that is the primary impetus for, you know, working on this.
Did you contact the homeowner, and did they resist in moving the snow, or what was there a conversation? Just curious. So,
part of it was the looked like there was a hole in the code in terms of what the city could do. So we had to discuss that for a while, to where we didn't talk to the homeowner initially. Now, getting back there from the snow about a week ago, right? Week and a half ago, the group of owners had pushed more snow into the area to where now, when I'm driving the city vehicle down there, if I kept going in line with the rest of the lane, I would have lost the right-hand third of the car because it was literally now well into the lane from the snow that they had pushed over there. So at that point, we gave them a snow violation letter to address the snow that they had pushed into the lane. And the owner had the weekend, did what he could with a shovel, which was effectively nothing. And then I was at Public Works talking to Cotter and Rob Carlson, the street supervisor, about, hey, we can get over there and get it cleared out, when the citizen actually came into Public Works and talked directly to Cotter and Carlson and I at that point, and so we could get it cleared out. The other part of it is that the city code, via the International Fire Code, it gives the authority of, hey, don't block fire hydrants, right? You know, these certain dimensions, don't park there, don't put materials there, obstructions, etc. There's no schedule in the city code for how we can give them a fee or charge them for cleanup, because really the fire hydrant is set back far enough that I think it wouldn't have been super easy to say, you know, this is within the existing snow removal code or the National Fire Code to where we could charge you for it. So we could absolutely clean it up, but there wasn't a way to say, hey, you made this giant pile and we got to spend $1,000, $2,000 of our, you know, crews to clean them up and get rid of your snow. There was no way to charge them for it.
Okay.
What we also have here is the person who we're charging can appeal to me to waive the fees, and if I don't do it, they can appeal to you. So we have checks and balances throughout this on any fees. Mr. Ringstead.
I agree with you. You want to piss off your neighbors, bury the fire hydrant, right? But, and this, I don't know, this might be more Jeremiah's, but I notice on this where you first plug in fire hydrants here, we're talking about sidewalks, streets, avenues, or alleys. Do we plow alleys?
No, we do not.
Is it like Hamilton Acres has got all alleys? It's a big subdivision. Whose responsibility is that?
Interesting.
I mean, there's a few other areas that have some, but I mean, we've got alleys in here that we're not supposed to be blocking the alleys, but I don't know that the city has ever plowed.
When you looked at those, when those were developed in the 50s and the 60s, Westgate has an alley. I grew up with an alley, and that was between Taku and Westgate. Mm-hmm. That was a developer who put that in there for easy access. You did not have waters and sewers back then. You had wells, and you didn't even have septics. You had cisterns or whatever. So the developer would go in and do that, and they never turned when those came into the city of Fairbanks. Fairbank, Westgate was about 1970. Those were never turned over as city streets. You know, I don't know. I don't think they're platted on people's lots, but they were never turned over as city streets. They never met code. They never turned them over.
Interesting. I mean, like you go down Farewell, and half of those streets, you know, half of those houses, their only access is the alley.
Yeah, a lot of people. That's how you get to your garage. Is on.
Yeah, there's no way to come over the curb, off that. So,
Mr. Marnie,
interesting.
I got two questions. So, who owns the fire hydrants? Is it the city or GS or your Golden Heart?
Golden Heart Utilities.
Golden Heart. The other question I had, I've got a neighbor that has a rental. Underneath their main floor. And I know this summer, the renter parked in front of the fire hydrant. So I didn't know if that was still law or not. So I called Chief Doopy, and he said, yeah, it's still the law. So where does one learn not to park in front of a fire hydrant?
In driving school.
Is that driving school? But they don't have
it. Yeah. Gosh,
yes. I mean, it's common sense, but
no, that's a law that you
so
learn.
When I was researching this whole issue, the only place that I found it, I didn't find it in city code. Chief Cacaro found it in the actual 2018 International Fire Code, and he had to screen snip the section and send it to me, and that's the only place I could find it. And I work here, so the average citizen.
Our city attorney wants to.
So it is a little obscure, but the city of Fairbanks has adopted the state administrative code, and it's actually in the state administrative code that you're not supposed to park. I think it's 15 feet and anywhere around a fire hydrant. It's a little weird if you're looking in the city code, because you'd have to understand the city code adopted the state codes, and the rule is in the state code. But Jared's correct. It's also in the International Fire Code that you're not supposed to do it. The International Fire Code has a penalty section, but the best I can tell, nobody uses it. Even in this, Jared had mentioned that, you know, the International Fire Code says don't pile materials in front of a fire hydrant. We elected to use the existing schedule of fees and charges, and actually charge it through Public Works, because they have a fee in the schedule already for clearing snow. So we just added and in front of fire hydrants.
Ms. Sprinkle.
On the, excuse me, almost the last paragraph, section two, above section three, it says something about the 10 feet changing to 15 feet parking within. The side of, I guess what I'm wondering is, does that matter to the marked street paint? Have we accommodated, is this a change in just paperwork, or does that have to affect the what's on the streets? Does anybody know? Bob?
Bob, come on up. Jared, you're relieved, sir, for the moment anyway.
Yeah, the Alaska Administrative Code says 15 feet either side of the hydrant, and that matches the signing in the core area that's patrolled by the parking authority.
Good, so no changes needed.
Okay. No changes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Okay. We're going to go to item 10, ordinance 6307, an ordinance reestablishing an incentive bonus program with Fairbanks Police Department for recruitment and hiring. Not introduced yet, but it'll be introduced at their next meeting. Mr. Ringstead.
How many vacancies do we currently have that we're trying to...
In anticipation of this question, I had our HR director ready for a report for you.
As of this morning, the police department is at 40 staff filling budgeted positions for 48 budgeted positions. That is including the part-time retirees that have come back to assist with the workload. And so you're looking at slightly more openings officially than the 8 that's there.
How many police officers that are on duty, how many are we down? Ooh, I'm sure you'll know that at our next first reading.
I can have that for Monday, yes. The reason I hesitate is because we've got openings at the sergeant level that the officers will move into. That process will complete itself this month. And so that will technically create more officer openings as they promote up. And so that's the reason I hesitate with that first thing this morning.
Yesterday, I met one of our newest officers, a retired Marine. So the incentive program is working, and I'd like to renew it. That's what we want to do. Mr. Marnie.
Well, I know FE, you know, the dispatch had something very similar to this. It's not amount, is it, and I talked to Christy. She doesn't want to reapply for this also.
Yeah, oh, wait, we've got
to. You know, she.
She uses it in a different way.
Yes, she does. And we're looking at a different program with them that we will be bringing to you in the future. It's more of a annual bonus for retention.
Okay.
We're looking at it that way. We're not ready to roll out the program yet, but that's a direction we're looking at taking this.
And then this question be to Margarita. This was basically on salary savings. So how is that going to affect it? Since we don't have any salary savings at this point, how does this apply?
If we are finding that we have applicants and not a salary savings, I will come back to the council to request additional funds outside of what you've budgeted to cover that. And if the council states no, then this program is not available.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we're going to go to item 11, discussion on employee capital incentive program. And you should have that in front of you. Margarita, you want to bring us through this, please?
Yes, I provided a copy of the ordinance. This discussion occurred within the Finance Committee briefly when we were looking at the potential savings for the year. And one of the Finance Committee members inquired about the program and what it entailed. And so you have ordinance number 6213. Which amended the program, and if you turn on the back, it gives you the procedures for determining the dollar value for the ESIP program, and it's 10% of annual salary savings based on the original approved budget, and that the funds will be paid by January 31st, and it's for a permanent full-time staff. And the report you have before you for the year 2024, you'll see that we had savings and five of the departments, really six, but one of the departments you gave a retention bonus. So, and you opted instead of the ESIP, you gave them the bonus, which was the Public Works Department, which would have been eligible for this program. But you see that you have, six departments that receive the funds for this year. And they range from $247 to as high as $8,022. And this is all based on the original budget and expenditures as of 12/31.
Mr. Ringstead.
So I haven't known a whole lot about this program or the success of it. But with all the vacancies we're having, I hate to give any more incentives to keeping positions opening to do this. And as I sit here and look at this, having looked at just at the last one, about where is the cost savings that's going to pay for this, are we better off rather than trying to save, I guess this 10% saving on your chart here says $164,000. We're better off to use that to do the retention stuff. Maybe it's cynical, but are we encouraging our people to leave positions vacant longer than they should? I mean, we put them in the budget so we can get some work done and do what we need to do. But if we're leaving them vacant, I mean, if we've got 10 out of a workforce of 50 in one department, that's 20% of our positions are vacant. You know, maybe there's another way of looking at this and saying maybe we can do something different with it. And I'm not, I don't know what people think of the success of what we've done over the recent years, but.
Ms. Sprinkle.
You know, I appreciate what John's saying because I don't know that 164 in the big picture is a lot, but at the same time, having the others work hard for the saved positions, I don't know. If this is good for morale, I'd be okay with it. Can you talk to it, Mike?
Yeah, this is one of the first times where I've seen this program kind of work the way it was supposed to. Usually they, you know, the people that get it are, you know, in the $200 range or you know, maybe up to $1,000. It's the first time I've ever seen it where it went as high as it did with dispatch. I don't think there's any chance that any department is intentionally trying to keep positions vacant to, you know, to get an ESIP at the end. I mean, that's, if you ask a dispatcher or any of the dispatchers right now, hey, would you rather have the $8,000 or would you rather be fully staffed? Pretty sure they'd all say fully staffed so they can go home. I mean, we're talking about, for them to get this, we literally had dispatchers working 16 hours a day, sleeping on the floor in the office, waking up in the morning, and doing it again the next day for multiple days in a row. I don't think anybody is even remotely trying to, you know, get one over on the city with this ESIP program. But that comes up every year, and every year it's the same sort of, you know, hey, are you guys doing this? And no, we're definitely not trying to, you know, game the system at all.
Mr. Clayworth, you wrote this ordinance. You want to chime in, please?
Actually, I did not write the original one. There was an ordinance that preceded this one that I thought had problems with it, and so this one here was an amendment to that one and took care of some of the problems, and Margarita can go into more detail on that. You know, when I first got in council, there were never bonuses at the end of the year. We started doing bonuses, I don't know, about 10 years ago or something, and it was on a department-by-department basis, but that was never done. The only exception to that rule was when a contract was negotiated, you'd have a signing bonus from time to time. But anyway, it became kind of an expected thing that we would give out bonuses at the end of the year. And now this last year, we didn't do that. We didn't do any bonuses, did we, Mike?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. So this program here kind of superseded the old bonus program. And it's based on salary savings, so you're not adding to the bottom line of the city. It's covered by unfilled positions, like you're talking about, John. I have mixed emotions about it, but I think this, if we're going to do this program, this is the way it works the best, I think.
Mr. Marney, then Mr. Ringstead.
Well, I was one of the original sponsors on this, and it was just, if you go back in time and I don't know if it was in 20 or 21. That was kind of the beginning of COVID, and we were beginning to have the retention problem. And so I forget who was co-sponsor of this, but Ms. Snow, Angela Snow, was a big part of this. In fact, I was over next door at the police station last week, and actually had somebody thank me for this because they had forgotten this was a policy for the city. And so it was like a gift from heaven for them. Mm-hmm. So,
Mr. Ringstead.
How does this work? I mean, how do you decide who gets money? Do you take and just divide it between all the employees, or how do you figure out who gets money?
We look at the original budget, and then we look at expenditures as of 12/31.
By department?
By department, uh-huh. And we determine, the first thing I determine is whether or not they had a vacancy through the year. If they had a vacancy, then they are eligible for the program, that department. And then the second step is to see if they have savings. And if that department doesn't have a savings, then they're not eligible for the program. And then after I determine
that there's savings, then I take 10% of that, and it's only permanent employees full-time that have been in working for the city over 6 months. And then I determine how many employees within that department meet that criteria, and I divide it by that amount of staff. And that's and how I come up equal. With the amount.
And each employee gets the same dollar amount.
Yes, they get the exact same dollar amount.
We were looking in finance committee the other day at our kind of getting ready to close out last year's budget, and we've got significant savings this year, but it's almost all from vacant positions. I don't remember what it is, but it was
a lot.
I'm talking $3.1 million.
Yeah, $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking a lot of money that's coming in vacant positions. And I think that I'm just trying to figure out what's the best way to try and deal with getting our money where it really belongs. But.
Any other discussion on this? Seeing none, we're going to go to item 12, Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell.
Good morning again. The Finance Committee met on January the 16th. We met with the auditors to discuss the preliminary plan for the 2024 audit. We reviewed the reports, the preliminary reports as of December 31, because this is the month that we do a lot of auditing adjustments to the statements. The balance sheet as of that date was $20 million. We have revenues of $42.9 million and expenditures of $34.7 million. Notice the difference between the two. The cash flow report was $41.6 million. I expressed to the Finance Committee at that time that we were not completed with expenditures for 2024. We had a check run last week, for 2024, and we'll have one final check run for 2024 expenditures the last week in January with the 27th. So those expenditure numbers will change. We have finalized all expenditures associated with payroll, so we do know that we have a $3.1 million in salary savings there. We discuss, I'm projecting that there may be a $5 million surplus based on our encumbrances. We'll see what happens and what's paid by the end of this month. And we discuss the amount of what we should look for regarding that $5 million. I expressed to the committee that based on the policy we put in place for the capital fund, that interest income and sale of assets totaled over $1.5 million, so we know that amount needs to be transferred to the capital fund based on that new policy. And we talked about reserving funds, committing funds for a fire apparatus, since the capital fund for the fire department is now at zero at the end of fiscal year 2025. We've talked about, we've been looking at a program from Iowa on nuisance property and abandoned building remediation, and we're looking at maybe implementing something similar to that in Fairbanks. So we're still assessing whether or not this is a program that we want to consider. So we had some discussions about that. And as I mentioned earlier, we did look, we just briefly talked about the ESIP program, and that's why it's on your agenda today, not only to give you information about the program, but to find out if the council wanted to continue forward on that. And internal, we have an internal policy on write-offs, and the Finance Committee kind of discussed that, moving that amount, we use a $3 amount, and they recommended $5 for that. Our next meeting will be Thursday, February the 27th. We'll be looking at probably the first statement for January, as well as what we would think might be our final numbers for 2024. And that was the Finance Committee meeting.
Questions for Ms. Bell? Yes.
It's not a question. I'm just going to say that I think our committee works really, really well. We cover a lot of ground.
Well, especially since I reappointed you to it.
I'm just telling. Of course it does. It really is a beneficial. I'm so glad we did what we've done to tear it apart from a working meeting. And I think the crew that meets everything that morning, this particular meeting, we got really excited about an idea I won't mention right now. But
first of all, so fun. Look at the names on that committee member list. That's impressive. Also, look how many were absent. None. So, Miss Therrien.
Yes, I was just wondering with regard to the money that we did not spend, can that be used to help pay for our labor contracts? And should we be trying to save some of that?
You can't appropriate
savings.
What you think might be savings into your budget. You just don't get to do that. You can give year-end bonuses like we were talking about under item number 11, the discussion of employee capital incentive program. And we use that a lot for marketing our positions now for potential hires. But we don't get to use it as a budget, say we're only going to save $3 million of $28 million in payroll. You don't get to do that in advance. You don't know what that number is, so we just don't get to do that. Anyway.
Well, the fund balance would be increased because of the savings that we had.
Yes, it does. And what we do a lot of the times, we take the savings that we have and we put that in our capital budget for capital projects that we work on that we need. $20 million as a fund balance, that's quite nice. But it's from salary savings, or it's from, say, $100,000 in savings today that we had on two items that Mr. Cotter got us. Mm-hmm. So it's cumulative throughout the year. Mr. Clayworth.
Yeah, to follow up on that, up until not too many years ago, when we did a budget, there was a line item for transfers to capital. So that the problem we have this year, where you have a zero line item in one department, would not happen. The only other real source of funding for capital is what's mandated by charter from the permanent fund, and it's not a lot of money. It helps a lot, and it was a good idea, but it doesn't cover what we need as far as equipment and maintenance in the city. So the only source we really have now is a surplus that we have at the end of the year, and it's not $20 million. You're mandated to have over $10 million for the fund here to get us through cash flow problems through the year. So you're looking at 10, and that's going to be reduced with accruals, if I remember right, that still have to be posted. We're very fortunate to have a surplus that we can put into capitals, like what we did today in buying new equipment. It is a luxury to have that. It's also a bonus to have it when we're matching, say, state grants that we can piggyback on. We have to have it for match for programs that come out of fast planning for the roads. One thing I've always been very nervous about is the deteriorating condition of the roads in Fairbanks, and we rely more and more on fast planning to take care of that. We do, overlays now and then and things like that, but we don't really get in and do, like when you and I were on council, a whole subdivision, we went in there and did that 1 year because we had money and capital to do it. And that's the nuts and bolts of what we do at the city is infrastructure, try and take care of what we have. If you start using that for labor costs or something else, then I guess I would ask, what do you do for capital? What do we do for matches? So I think it's kind of dangerous to go down that path.
Mr. Ringstead.
The other thing that I look at, and we discussed this in the finance committee the other day, of this $5 million, it's actually probably when we get done balancing the books, it's more like 3 point something. Most of that is out of salary savings, and as our troops over here are desperately trying to fill those positions, if we fill the number of positions we budgeted in police and dispatch and the rest of them, we might have the money right now. By the end of this year, we might not have it, and next year, we definitely don't have it. So it's one-time money that we won't have the money next year, the year after, or that year after that. That's the problem with one-time money. I think we need to make sure we're the right, kind of where Jerry is, that, you know, you look at these things. I mean, we just sent out close to $1 million worth of equipment. If you don't save that money, these guys are going to be wiring their equipment back together. So I think that that's something we've got to be very careful with. But I think we need to continue to look at how we go forward with the capital. If we have the opportunity, maybe we can do some of those things. The other item on here, a small item, in terms of writing off. At what point do we just write stuff off and it's okay, we're $3 to $5? I have a piece of property that the borough thinks is a separate lot, and every year I get a tax bill for $4.30. And when I asked them, they said, oh, we have two that are smaller than that. And I said, how in the world is it worth it for you to send out tax bills and collect this and do the paperwork for $4? It can't be. I'm not sure $5 is even a reasonable number. Maybe we ought to do 10. I mean, you can't go to McDonald's for $10 anymore. I think at some point there's too much work and energy put into trying to save nickels and dimes and missing the dollars. But I'm assuming at some point, this is a policy the council deals with? I mean, we got the recommendation from the finance committee, but does that then come back before the council?
It's an internal control policy.
So it's something that these guys deal with.
Within the department that we, yeah, it's not in code.
Then they send it over. Policy then they send it over to me for my concurrence.
Okay.
Yeah. One comment I did miss is in your finance note, there was a committee member, Joshua Church. He expressed concerns about our growing costs with stagnant revenue. Yeah. So it is something that the committee is going to continue to look at as we review our expenditures and how they're growing in relationship to our revenues. We will we're trying to approach some areas of that, but yes, we are concerned about the future, our future expenditures in relationship to revenue.
Ms. Sprinkle.
And I'm going to throw out the fact that we used the word or the phrase economic development. So that is the key phrase for this upcoming discussions and I think generally our theme for the year.
Ms. Bell, your committee looks a lot and focuses mainly on our expenses. I want you to start looking at potential revenue sources too. There's two sides of the equation. Any other discussion? Okay. Next is item 13, Mayor and Council Member comments. We'll start with the lady in Mexico who looks tanned or burned. Ms. Therrien.
Thank you. I'm starting to get a little brown. I have no comments.
Mr. Cleworth.
I touched briefly on past planning and the projects coming through. We've had some lapses of fund in some areas that we could put back into the capital improvements program. And so we're looking for ways to spend money, which is always a luxury. And I just have to compliment Bob and the crew. When we're looking for projects that we can do now, you know, we have things that are ready to go quickly and they've done the work on. And so we can put our projects in there ahead of other ones that just aren't that advanced and take advantage of that immediately. So I think it's always wise, and engineering has always done that, to have projects ready for us to take advantage of if the opportunity arises. Mr. Church on the committee there, you're talking about revenues, Mayor, and I get a little nervous on things like that, as you know, but sometimes they're justified. My name has been on a lot of revenue generators, and one of them is the business license tax, which we had to do 1 year. We were so desperate. And that costs me personally dearly. So I'll have only myself to blame for a part of that one. But he was concerned about loss of property inside city limits, the actual amount of structures, the same way you're losing revenue on that. But the reality with the tax cap is you are not. You're actually transferring revenue to other properties then, because we are allowed to collect every dollar we did last year and grow it by the consumer price index and grow it by new construction. And so if property assessments go down uniformly amongst commercial or and residential, your mill rate by the formula is going up to make up for that loss. The reverse of that is also true. If assessments climb rapidly, people always say, well, that's the way you're going to get money out of us. You just keep raising the assessments and violating the cap. Doesn't work that way. The mill rate then has to come down to plug those numbers. So it's the dichotomy there is quite interesting in how it all works. But a lot of people do not understand that concept and the formula and how it works. And probably we need to do a better job at explaining that. But that's it. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Not more than just to say thank you, Jeremiah. But to find savings, that was really great. So I'm very happy. I think Jeremiah is doing a great job, by the way. I think the roads look good. He's taking care of things. And thank you.
Mr. Ringstead. Mr. Marnie.
Well, Margarita mentioned it. This Iowa experiment, would one be able to look at that since I'm not on the committee?
Oh yeah. Yes, I'll be happy to provide information about the program and research we've done so far.
Okay, thank you.
Locally.
Other than that, great meeting.
Ms. Tidwell.
Later this week, there is an Economic Development Committee meeting. I believe on the agenda is Joe Moss going to come and talk about the Ardor, and I did want to share that I was really glad to see that the resolution for support passed through while I was gone, and really looking forward to that process. I know it's moving right along. So.
I have no comments. Motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Any disagreement with adjourning? We're adjourned. Very good meeting, everyone.